I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American Empire and National Security State operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, we're joined by Angela Berry, the defense attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, the convicted assassin of Robert F. Kennedy. I realize, of course, this is a rather controversial subject. A lot of people are very upset about the news of Sirhan Sirhan potentially being released on parole. But I feel it was important to get the defense's side of the story, which is why I reached out to Angela Berry. And to be honest, my view does come out in this conversation. Specifically, I feel that if Sirhan Sirhan is not a threat to the public and is rehabilitated, he likely should be released at this point. I do try to ask some questions, though, concerning how many in the public feel otherwise, including members of the Kennedy family. Although it should be noted, as we will discuss in the course of our conversation, that other members of the Kennedy family are supportive of Sirhan's release. In addition, I also tried to ask Angela about Sirhan Sirhan's memory loss issues, which have been criticized by journalist Dan Moldea. And I believe that Angela provided an answer. Whether you consider it adequate or not, I will let you decide. I think that we had a very interesting conversation, and I hope you will, at the very least, find it informative. And with that being said, let's get right to it with Angela Berry, the defense attorney for Sirhan Sirhan. Welcome to Parallax Views, Angela Berry, the defense attorney for Sirhan Sirhan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
So, Angela, I wanted to have you on the show because I feel that, you know, the news of Sirhan Sirhan being granted a possible parole has made a lot of headlines recently. And I thought it was important to investigate why he is up for parole and get your take on those things. I guess, first up, what led you to take on Sirhan Sirhan's case? Because this one's a controversial one for a lot of people.
It certainly is. I received a call from his brother in June of 2020, left a message on my machine. I hadn't thought about Sirhan Sirhan, hadn't thought about Robert Kennedy in many, many, many years. In fact, probably the last I'd heard was when Sirhan had been slashed in prison. And then, you know, it was out of my consciousness. So I got a call from his brother asking me to seriously consider taking a look at his case and consider taking it on for the next parole hearing. I did not call him back immediately. Part of me almost thought it was a prank call because I had no idea how he would have found me. And then the next day I got another call from a friend and a colleague of theirs, somebody who has been writing stories about the various murders from the 1960s. And he urged me to consider taking on the case. So I subsequently learned that Sirhan had been speaking with some of my other clients who were at the same facility, RJ Donovan, and they had recommended me to him.
And if you could, just for my listeners' sake, could you talk a little bit about your background in law?
Sure. So I am a criminal defense attorney. I have been practicing for 30 years in the Los Angeles area. I also do work in the different counties that are close enough that are travelable for me within the Southern California area. I do both trial level work and appellate work. This was my first parole hearing, however.
So I just want to get something out of the way real quick here. And I know we discussed this before recording. The way you're approaching the sort of defense here, it's not based on anything with relation to theories of, oh, was it really Sirhan? Was there someone else? Were there multiple shooters? None of that is going into the work you're doing right now.
That's correct. And there was a very deliberate reason for that, because the only issue for the parole board is whether or not the prisoner poses a current unreasonable risk to society if released. So the way the statutes in California are written, those who are serving life sentences, not life without the possibility of parole, so a life sentence, have a due process interest in being released if they do the rehabilitation and if the board finds them suitable. And a suitability finding is based on not posing a current and unreasonable risk to society.
Can we talk a little bit about that? Just from your experience and you know, what you've seen, why is Sirhan not a threat? And I happen to agree. I don't think he's a threat. He's, I believe, 77 years old right now. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are the reasons that we should believe, hey, this man is not a threat to the public anymore?
Sure. Okay. So he's been in custody for 53 years. 49 of those years have been dedicated towards his rehabilitation. The reason why the first 4 years were not was because he was on death row. And his sentence, as you and your listeners may or may not know, was commuted, as were all death penalty sentences at that time, because of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling that death penalty statutes like that in California were unconstitutional. So all those on death row were commuted to life with the possibility of parole. That happened for him in 1972. So he has been on his road to rehabilitation to the extent that the institutions were able to offer him that rehabilitation. It's been quite a frustrating road for him because they've kept him in administrative segregation or in solitary confinement for many years, not because of anything he did, but because they were worried about his safety within the prison. So he had a slow start. And over the year, he's spent 49 years doing it. So he's at that point now where finally the board agreed that what he's done and how he demonstrated it at the hearing was enough to convince them that he is no longer a threat to the community.
Was there anything in particular that he demonstrated that was cited?
Yes, there were several things. And in fact, the hearing officer spent about 45 minutes justifying the decision that they came to. And they did rely on quite a few things, including some laws that are new to California that did not exist at the time of his last parole hearing in 2016. And I can get to that in a moment. But with respect to specific things that they pointed to were several letters that were submitted to the board from correctional officers who have a day-to-day contact with Mr. Sirhan. They were recommending that he be released. They found that to be very persuasive information. These are people who see him day in and day out in his daily routines, in his exercise, in his work, in his programming. And when I say programming, the rehabilitative work he's been doing. And we had several letters that they indicated that they believed he was rehabilitated and he did not have a predisposition for violence. So that was very important to the board.
And you said there was also something you wanted to come back to about 2016.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. So since his 2016 hearing, two new laws have come into play, which affect these parole hearings and have to do with the assessment of whether somebody is still a danger to society. And one of those laws in California is the youthful offender mitigation. So the idea with that is, and it started with cases that, again, California took the cue from the United States Supreme Court when they started talking about cases that had to do with juveniles. The U.S. Supreme Court cases were dealing with juveniles, and California took it further. But the idea is the brain is still developing. The unrefuted neuroscience findings show that the brain is still developing, specifically the prefrontal lobe. And the prefrontal lobe grows until we're in our mid-20s for everybody. For somebody who has trauma in their life, it takes even longer for the prefrontal lobe to fully develop. And what's important about that part of the brain is that's the part that's responsible for decision-making, for curbing impulsivity, for weighing the costs and benefits of proceeding with any action. So the idea is, so the U.S. Supreme Court was dealing with specifically minors, but California said, wait a minute. And when I say California, the legislature said, wait a minute. This neuroscience research proves that it affects everybody until their mid-20s. So we here in California are going to consider anybody who commits their crime under the age of 26 also is entitled to this analysis of and this mitigation that their mind was still developing. And so they allow now for these prisoners who are doing these life sentences to create a record that talks about not only the neuroscience that affects every human's mind, but also what was going on in that particular person's youth that could have also impacted their ability to make sound, rational, safe decisions. So that's the youthful offender mitigation. And so what the board is the parole board is required to now do is to give, quote, great weight, unquote, to the fact that this might have been going on in the person's mind at the time and in their brain, which would affect their culpability. And then measure that against the rehabilitation that the person has done. And so that consideration then weighed very heavily in favor of his release. So that was one of the laws that came into effect that that significantly increased his chances of getting this finding going into the hearing. And then the second one is here in California, we also have what is the it's the elderly prisoner parole consideration. And again, this is the legislature was informed by science on the idea that basically as we get older, we're less violent. So we age out of violence. So under this statute, the board was also tasked with giving, and the words they use for this one is, quote, special consideration, unquote, to the fact that the person is elderly and statistics show that they would be less of a risk to society. So we have those in addition to all the rehabilitation and programming he's been doing.
I just wanted to add to that. I think that's an important point because I am seeing a lot of research coming out in the past few years, decades, showing that, yes, it does seem like we do age out of violence. As people get older, they're less inclined towards extreme violence.
Yes, exactly. And that was one of the things that they considered, but all it did was confirm what we knew through the psychological testing that he had been doing, which for many, many years, the psychological tests have indicated that he is on the low end. They categorize it as low up to high. There's no such thing as zero risk. And he's been getting these low risk assessments time and time again since the mid 80s for all his parole hearings. But finally, this board decided to take that recommendation to heart.
So one thing I did want to talk about was this issue of, I know for years Sirhan has said he does not remember all the events. And I know people like journalist Dan Moldia have been very critical of that. He says, I think Moldia said, well, that's convenient. Is Sirhan repentant or, you know, because I think that's the question that comes up when people bring up this issue of whether he remembers the events or not.
Yeah, no, that is a good point and a good topic of discussion. However, Mr. Sirhan has been very consistent with not having a specific memory of all of the details of this evening. He was drinking that night. That is unrefuted. But the psychologists who did the most recent in-depth evaluation of him in preparation for the youthful offender mitigators has suggested that he has what's called complex PTSD based on his childhood experiences in Jerusalem at the time, where there were bombings and neighbors getting shot up and seeing his brother run over by an army truck, and he had a horrible, horrible existence when he was in Palestine before the family immigrated to the United States. She suggested that he has complex PTSD. And one of the things that happens with complex PTSD, if there's a triggering event, it can cause the person to go into this disassociative state so that they can, it's basically a preservation mechanism where you kind of just cut off your whole thinking process and the memory that goes along with it. So she suggested that that could be going on as well. But Mr. Sirhan had to reckon with the idea that he was still there. He had a gun. He had no reason taking a gun to the ambassador that night. He was drinking. There was a combination that we should never put together, which is drinking and a loaded gun. And the consequences of the night were severe for the country. And he based his insight and his work on what he does remember, and realizing that, in fact, because of the initial behavior of drinking and bringing a gun. And he does remember shooting off two bullets. He does remember that. He doesn't remember what he was aiming at. He doesn't have a specific memory of that. But he knows that his actions led to this whole horrible, tragic experience in our history, and did his insight work from that perspective.
So, is there a sort of repentance on his part for what happened?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and he has articulated that not only to the board, but when he met with Robert Kennedy Jr. in 2018, the two of them sat down together. This was before I represented him. But the prison allowed Robert Kennedy Jr. to visit Mr. Sirhan, and the two of them held hands, and Robert Kennedy has told me that he saw Mr. Sirhan's remorse, and the two of them connected on a human level, and that he forgave Sirhan for what he's done. Mr. Sirhan has also expressed that to Paul Schrade, who is also one of his supporters and one of the people who was shot that evening. And then also at the hearing, Douglas Kennedy, one of the youngest, if not the youngest Kennedy child, who had pretty much remained silent on this whole issue, was at our hearing the other day. And we didn't know where he stood on this, because there wasn't much out there that we could glean as to his position on this. And he had a very profound reaction to seeing Mr. Sirhan, and ultimately came to the conclusion that watching Mr. Sirhan and hearing him articulate what he's learned from his behavior 53 years ago, that Mr. Sirhan was deserving of the compassion and love and forgiveness. And that was very powerful, because he started his statement with something to the effect of, I grew up my entire life, and until now in my life, I've always feared this man, Sirhan, and his name, and seeing him face to face pretty much is blowing me away, but I see his humanity and he is deserving of release. And I thought that that was really powerful.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that, because I feel like a lot of people are saying, well, you know, what about the Kennedys? How do they feel about this? And it does seem like there is support from at least some of the Kennedys in favor of this parole. I know there's another member or two of the family that are against it, but it's not really black and white, is it?
No, it's not. And I understand, you know, they lost their father, right? The country lost a leader. So not just the Kennedys, but there are a lot of people who are very upset about this decision. But this was a decision that the hearing officers had to make, not based on emotion, but based on the law. And I think that that's where the divide is here. There's those who are reacting out of their emotion. And this is still raw to a lot of people. I was very young at the time this happened, so I don't have an independent memory of the assassination. I was three. But those who were a little bit older than me, and you know, and the generation above me, who have this memory, it's still really raw to them. And I know that a lot of people are grappling with the idea of prison reform, the idea of redemption, but their emotions that are still attached and still very raw from this horrible event. And you know, that's probably just going to take some time for people to come to grips with that.
There's two Kennedys that are currently supporting the parole. Is there anyone else of note that is very supportive of this parole?
No, to answer that direct question, no. I do know that Kathleen Kennedy had made some comments years past in support of opening up the investigation. But as far as the parole, Douglas and Robert Kennedy Jr.
So in regards to the sort of raw emotions people have about this, I think an important thing to look at here is, you know, are there benefits to society with regards to this case? Because I think there actually are. I mean, you know, do we want to live in an extremely, totally punitive society, or do we want to live in a society where there's rehabilitation? I think that's a question that is raised from this case.
I agree with you. But in California, our system is the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. It's not the department of lock them up, throw away the key. That's not the system in which we work here. I can't comment on all of the states, but I think that over the last many, many years, we've been going as a nation towards rehabilitation and redemption.
And also, I mean, I think there's an argument that could be made that not granting this parole, you know, if he's not a threat to the public, why are we wasting resources on keeping him locked up?
That's true. And a lot of letters written by people all over raised that issue when they were writing their letters in support of his release. And this was also touched on with the whole elderly prisoner issues, because he does have some health issues. And we as taxpayers are continuing to pay for his health issues as an old man who is not a risk to society. So we did see that in a lot of these letters from the public. Just we had letters from a whole cross section of the public, from school teachers to people who grew up during that era and they remember hearing it on the news, to a former district attorney. You know, so we have people from all over the place. And that was one of the very oft repeated comments, was it's ridiculous to waste our resources on a man who is no longer dangerous.
Before we close out here, for the people that are having sort of a raw emotional reaction to this, what would you want them to get out of the conversation that we've been having here today?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said before, and we can't ignore our emotions. We're not robots, right? And nor do we want people to ignore their emotions. But there's a place for emotions, and there's a place where they don't belong. And when the sole issue is, does he present a current and unreasonable risk to society if he were released, there's no room for emotion in that. It's just, you have to look at the facts. You have to look at what he's done. You have to look at his age. You have to look at his health issues. You have to listen to how he has expressed his insight and remorse. And those are the only things that are relevant for this determination. I can't change how people feel. Emotions are real. I'm not asking anybody to deny those emotions, but we are a country. California is a state of laws. We're not run by our emotions.
Is there anything with regards to the way this has been discussed, whether it's in media or just amongst, you know, the public in general, that you think maybe is being left out of the conversation, that people aren't paying enough attention to when it comes to the parole?
Sure. And this would be specifically with respect to our hearing that occurred the other day. because I've only seen one or two articles even touch on this issue. And I know that this has been a big issue for the Kennedys as well. So here in Los Angeles, we have a new DA, George Gascon, who has pledged both prior to being elected and since he's been in office to revamp basically the way the district attorney's office looks at crime and punishment. And he is a strong proponent for rehabilitation. Part of that platform is his policy that he would not be opposing the release of prisoners who have served their minimum amount of time in custody and if CDCR found them to be a low risk of danger. Both of those things apply to Mr. Sirhan. A lot of people are saying that it's George Gascon's fault that Sirhan was released. But the board, when making their decision, they specifically explained that whether the DA's office were here or not in opposition, that would not have changed their decision. They are basing their decision on the evidence that they had in front of them and the consideration of the DA's office from the many years that they had opposed it. And they still felt that given the changes that Mr. Sirhan had made and given the changes in the law, that there was no other way to go. So it's not about the DA's office not being there.
How many people were on the board that looked this over, by the way?
There were two. So they make a recommendation to the full board.
Okay. And then just anything else you would like to say in closing about this case and where you hope things head now that, you know, it seems like he will be released.
Well, we'll see if he's released. There's an opportunity for the full board to renege on it. They can either adopt it, they can reject it, or they can amend it. And then once they do that, then the governor has the opportunity to do the same thing, adopt, amend, or reject. So I'm hoping that the politics and emotions can stay out of it as it did for these two hearing officers and that the law is followed. He is no risk to society. He just wants to get out. And as he said, me and my brother are just two old men who want to just spend our last years in quiet together and, you know, live in obscurity. And I'm hoping that he will have that opportunity to do so.
I want to thank you, Angela Berry, for coming on Parallax News. I just wanted to say in closing here, I mean, to me, this is an important issue. I mean, I think we are moving towards a rehabilitative society. And I think it's important that we look over cases like this one and say, hey, if, you know, this person isn't a threat to the public, you know, maybe it's time to let them go. I mean, Vincent Bugliosi a few years ago got caught some flack for saying that Susan Atkins should have been released when she had a brain tumor, you know, and he got flack for that. But you know, it's true. If we want to live in a rehabilitative society, we do have to consider letting people go when they're not a threat anymore to the public.
Right. And we can't pick and choose.
Well, thank you again, Angela Berry. How can people keep up with the work you're doing or if they need a defense attorney?
Well, my website is www.guardingyourrights.com.
And thank you again, Angela Berry.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax View. I hope that you got something out of my conversation with Angela Berry. Again, I know it's a controversial topic, and I hope that you didn't react to it in a way where, you know, it deeply upset you. That's not my intent here. I do want to provide an alternative perspective on things, though, and I felt like Angela, aside from some newspaper interviews, I haven't really seen her in the media that much, and I wanted to give her side of the story and why she believes Sirhan deserves to be released. As always, if you appreciate the work I do, please, please, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. It is you, the listener, that makes this show possible. I'm trying to get a few more advertisers involved, but most of my income is coming from the Patreon. And, you know, I gotta make rent, and I'm sure all of you guys do too. So if you can, and only if you can, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. $1, $5, $10, and $15 tiers. At the $5 tier, you get exclusive bonus content, including video interviews of certain Parallax Views programs, including hopefully this one, and some archived editions of Parallax Views that will only be available on the Patreon page. And of course, at the $10 and $15 tiers, you get a producer's credit shout out. That's right, producer's credit shout outs to Mark, Arlen, Spartacus, Ed, Gratz, James, Jamie, Mickey, Brian, The Warnerd, Emilia, Chase, Orc, Black Tuna, Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Martin, Brian S., and Jeffrey. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well then, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. It is you, the listener, that makes this show possible. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.